Federal Drive is presented by GEHA, Government Employees Health Association, proudly providing health and dental benefits to federal employees and their families. Visit GEHA.com.
Last month, the Department of Veterans Affairs and the Defense Department launched a new interoperable electronic health record at the Captain James A. Lovell Federal Health Center in North Chicago. It's the first big VA facility to use the EHR, and during that deployment, the agency's inspector general noticed a few challenges presented by the EHR scheduling system. For details, Federal News Network's Eric White spoke with VA's Deputy Assistant IG, Lee Ann Seawright.
As you know, the EHR rollout took a pause in 2022 and then continued through 2023, but DOD was continuing with their implementation. And so because Lovell is a joint facility, VA and DOD wanted to implement the EHR at Lovell. And so we thought it was important to really look back at the prior implementations and look at the issues encountered and then consider that for Lovell, being that it is a more complex facility and the risks of that implementation at that facility.
Gotcha. So you're almost trying to get ahead of the game and work yourself out of a job if a problem does arise later on.
I don't know if we'll ever get there.
All right. So the issue was pertaining to problems with the scheduling system that you saw at smaller facilities that rolled out the EHR. What in particular about this? First off, yeah, if you could just lay out, you know, what is the scheduling system for the new electronic health record? Is it a unique scheduling system or what is it?
No, it's part of the Cerner Oracle package, but scheduling is a critical element of gaining access to any facility, right, or any appointment that you have. And so as focused as VA is on expanding access to facilities, scheduling has a whole level of complexity to it for VA because the VA does so much more for its veterans as it coordinates and, you know, scheduling of appointments. You know, us on the outside maybe don't get that coverage that they do, that veterans get within the VA facilities. That coordination and collaboration between the schedulers and the clinics and the providers, there's a lot of back and forth and a lot of nuance to those processes. And so that's why there is complexity in the scheduling and why we wanted to focus on that.
Yeah, especially, you know, with the backdrop of scheduling has been an issue for the agency famously, you know, in the past couple decades. And, you know, probably one of the main complaints that you hear from people who are under the Veterans Affairs care, does that stack up as, you know, we really got to get the scheduling part of this right?
Correct. You know, what we found in our previous reviews on scheduling and on other reviews in the EHRM space is that there are some nuances to these scheduling packages. For example, we identified issues with the displaced queue. So when a MSA works a schedule, like for a provider, you know, if that provider needs to take leave or if the provider leaves the organization, you know, that creates a lot of complexity in moving all those existing appointments that need to be rescheduled, canceling them, and then rescheduling them. Under the old system, there were ways that they handled that. Under the new system, they had the ability to block out those schedules and then move them into what they called this displaced queue. So it was an efficiency, but what we found is that appointments seemed to fall off of that queue, and nobody had that visibility to know that those appointments were lost. So maybe a veteran wasn't aware that that appointment was scheduled or rescheduled and shows up to the facility and there's actually no appointment for them, or they fall through the cracks completely and they don't get rescheduled. And so it didn't happen every time the displaced queue was used. And so there's, you know, fixes that need to occur, but those fixes weren't happening fast enough. And so these five facilities that had already fielded EHRM started to work, do their own workarounds, and everybody had a different workaround, and that's not efficient either.
Yeah, I can't imagine, you know, a workaround at a smaller facility is easier to discover than at a large facility where, you know, you find the workaround and that's going to mess up four or five other appointment blocks, I imagine.
Correct.
We're speaking with Lee Ann Seawright from the Office of Inspector General for the Department of Veterans Affairs. And as always, when we're talking about Veterans Affairs, staffing comes into play. You mentioned that that is part of your concerns as well, that the level of staffing and overtime is not quite there yet to meet the pre or regular deployment of the amount of appointment levels that are going to come from the implementation of the new EHR. What did you all have to find on that front?
So when we looked back at the five facilities that have already implemented EHRM, we found that they had beefed up their staffing quite a bit, or if they didn't hire additional, they used an excessive amount of overtime to supplement that. And this was a somewhat cursory review, so we weren't able to get into the depth of like why the scheduling takes that much more. We think there's some complexities to the process. And like we spoke previously, we think facilities create all these workarounds because the rollout of EHRM and the challenges that they haven't done, EHRM IO hasn't done a good job of standardizing some of these issues so that facilities are doing it the same. And so in creating your own workarounds, you're creating other processes. In addition, we found that some of the lack of standardization or decision on making changes to VA's processes, you know, created additional work for VA as well for the schedulers. For example, facilities generally send out mailing to every veteran for every appointment. You get a letter reminding you that you have an appointment so that, you know, that helps manage our cancellation and no-show rates within the VA. But the new scheduling package doesn't do that. And so facilities were taking it upon themselves to come up with a solution, whether they created the letters themselves, whether they contracted that out. And so those issues, you know, result in more time and more effort. And so as not only learning a new system, but then having to do all these workarounds and deal with these challenges, we think are one of the contributing factors of why they need to hire so many more for these rollouts.
And let's talk about the actual information within the electronic health record. We're still having a persistent problem with inaccurate patient information. Is that coming just from the conversion from one system to this Cerner system, or is something else at play there?
With the rollout of EHRM with the Cerner solution, you know, it is a DOD and a VA. Each has their own systems, but the intent is for that interoperability. And so the federated system that feeds into this system is called DEERS, the Defense and Eligibility and Enrollment System. And so this system, you know, is where when you enter into DOD and you work through DOD, you have all your vital information, right? Your address, all of that. So they're using that as the source of information for veterans. But a lot of these veterans separated from the military many years ago and maybe don't access DEERS any longer. And so that information was out of date. And so VA and DOD have worked to clean up that information, but there's still some misinformation between and misunderstanding and really a lack of awareness at the scheduler level that some of those issues have been fixed. So schedulers are still doing some of those workarounds that might or might not be necessary still because of that communication issue.
And updated data entry means, hey, we need more people to do that too, right?
Correct.
So, you know, you offered no recommendations on this one. Like I said, it was a little bit different from what we usually, you know, see from the IG. Was this more of just, hey, we want to make sure that VHA is aware of these issues as, you know, let's take it a little bit slowly this time and know what's going to be coming down the pipeline? Was that the intent here?
Right. So what we issued was a management advisory memo. And so you're right. We did not make any recommendations. That's per that management advisory memo template. So really what we wanted to do is just summarize issues that we had already highlighted. We wrote a report in 2021 on the scheduling issue. We still have recommendations open from that. And we wanted to really summarize all the issues that we've seen and bring that to light. And so that VA had that information at their hand as they went to the level fielding.
Yeah. And, you know, it's called a management alert, but something that kind of, as you mentioned, summarizes everything. It, you know, this could be something that a manager could pass down to those below him or her and say, you know, hey, these are the things to watch out for. Would that be a good use of this document as well?
Absolutely. I mean, as VA continues to make decisions on the implementation of EHRM and improvements on the scheduling package, I think it's a tool that they can refer back to. And for those facilities that have already implemented EHRM, the Cerner solution, I believe that, you know, they could use this to inform their workforce of the changes that have or have not occurred to be aware of that.
Leanne Seawright is Deputy Assistant Inspector General at Veterans Affairs, speaking with Federal News Network's Eric White. We'll post this interview and make sure to include a link to the report at federalnewsnetwork.com/Federal Drive. Hear the Federal Drive on demand. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Leadership today, especially within the federal workforce, is being tested more than ever before. As the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency's Chief People Officer, Elizabeth Comstetter sees a focus on people as absolutely crucial to her leadership style. Comstetter joined Shane Canfield, WEPA CEO, to reflect on her years of experience leading in the federal human capital space.
Hello, and welcome to the Lessons in Leadership podcast. I'm your host, Shane Canfield, CEO of WEPA. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Elizabeth Comstetter, Chief People Officer at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. Elizabeth, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
In your current position at CISA, one of your responsibilities is ensuring a people-first culture. Explain what that is, and what's the role of leadership in creating and shaping that culture?
Yes, at CISA, really paramount to our culture is a people-first driven aspect, so that we are really looking at how do we accomplish our mission through our people. And in order to do that, we really value our people. We want them to feel empowered and supported and respected, and also that their managers care about them. So well-being is important. Psychological safety in the workplace is important, so that all voices and ideas are heard. So I like to call it our North Star. Having a people-first culture really starts with the people in order to get our incredibly difficult mission accomplished. In terms of leadership, which is a great question, I think we all know that culture is really driven by leadership and the behaviors that we allow and we reinforce in our leaders. So we really work at making sure that our leaders are bringing out the best in their people every day. So again, that they feel they can bring their voice, especially an opinion that might not go along with the majority of a group, so that we get that diverse perspective, we get those different ideas and experiences. And that's really where we find that it's important that leaders are purposefully bringing out their talent on their teams to enable our mission.
Yeah, excellent. We're going through a culture project at our work.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it's been 6 months in the making, and it's going really well, but it is work.
Yes.
And it requires from the top down. So I'm also involved in that. I hear you.
Great.
Throughout your career, you piloted many different talent management programs, including at NASA, the CIA, the FBI, just to name a few, and you have an amazing career. What have you learned, or how have you might have changed along the way in creating and leading those programs?
Yes, and I am so honored to have had a career in public service across multiple federal agencies, always in the realm of human resources and workforce performance. And I think because I study organizations and people in them, I've come to realize, particularly in the federal government, that many of our programs are really grounded in the industrial era thinking, that this is organizationally structured in a hierarchy with boxes and lines on charts, with the center being around jobs and what do we need to get this job done in terms of skills and training. And what I found is that we're really not in the industrial era anymore, where we would promote the smartest people who knew that work, and they would then tell the people on their team how to do things and oversee that work. We're now in a digital era and the information era, where work gets done collaboratively across geographic boundaries and certainly across org charts. So we like to call it networks or hierarchies, and we really need to, again, unleash people so they can find those other people who are working on similar problems or have the right ideas. And so I really like to think of our work now in the talent programs being human-centered. It's more about the user and the experience than about the rules and regulations. So although we have to have rules and regulations, certainly in human resources, is that person experiencing what they need and getting what they need for their role at that time? So not so much on the job, but on the person. So for example, we're recruiting. What's the applicant experiencing? Because if they're not having a good experience with our organization from the time we're recruiting them, they're going to go work for somebody else. Same thing with like first-time supervisors. We know they need certain training, but telling them to sit in a class for 1 week and then hope a year from now they'll remember what they learned to apply, that's not really human-centered. The human-centered is, What do they need when they need it? And building modules or just-in-time training and bringing that to the people, to that user, as they need it. So that's really, I think, the most important focus of talent programs today in this era to enable the workers to be the best they can be in their roles.
Excellent. New thinking. This is always an interesting question. Has there been a time when, as a leader, that you've made a mistake? And what is that? And I think most important, what did you take away from that? What did you learn from that?
Well, I kind of chuckle because I think as leaders, we have to learn to recognize our mistakes, admit our mistakes, and that they are opportunities to learn. And so I've had to do my own self-reflection on making mistakes and when things don't turn out the way that I expected them to. Makes me think of a time when I was at the Transportation Security Administration and I was a supervisor and I was really embroiled with my program. I was the technical leader of it. I understood it. I'd run it for years. And I was making a briefing for a decision that had to be made about this program that was very near and dear to me. And I presented the briefing to one of the very senior people in the agency. And I think there are about 20 people in the room. And I had gone through the briefing, answered all the questions, and that leader then said, okay, I'm going to go around the room and get everybody's opinion, and then everybody gets to vote, which kind of set me aback because there were people in that room that didn't have any technical knowledge about my program. She even turned to the executive assistant there, taking notes on the meeting, and said, go ahead, and I want to hear from you. And I realized, in hindsight, I had stopped listening. I had been in transmitting all of my knowledge and what I saw to be the right way, and I was not listening to different perspectives in the room because I didn't value that they were bringing any kind of input to this particular decision. And it didn't go as I had hoped, and I left very disappointed and was busy blaming the senior leader and how that meeting was conducted, that she let all these people have opinions when they didn't know, in my mind, didn't know what they were talking about. And so in reflection on that, I realize, and now as I've moved into more senior leadership positions, I realize that was a mistake, that it actually is really important to listen, especially to people who have different perspectives or at a different point in the career, not just the people who know the program or the technical really well. And so that was a mistake I made, and I realized in my own sense I wasn't listening to very different opinions, and I probably should have because I would have learned more about what was needed for this program going forward than just leaving, getting upset that it didn't go a certain way. So I've really practiced active listening. I've practiced making sure there's very different people on teams and certainly on committees or councils, that we need early careers, people new to the agency, people who haven't walked in the shoes of the technical workforce, because they're asking questions we need to hear for these programs to be successful.
Excellent. Your career in talent management means your work is very closely tied to people. And even your title, Chief People Officer, what does that mean to you to be a leader in the federal system with that focus?
Isn't that a great title? I just love the title Chief People Officer, and I think it's my dream job, really, to be focused on people and culture and the workforce strategy for the whole agency. And I'm just so excited to be at CISA at this point in time. We're only 4 years young as an agency, so we're really still creating who we're going to become as an agency and what is our culture. And what kind of people and talent do we need to be sure we have to be successful? So it's very exciting for me to be in this role with a intentional focus on culture, because it's one of those things, if you leave it to chance and you kind of hope it goes the way you want it to, it probably won't. So by building programs, including leadership development programs, including any kind of training and learning and career growth, and engagement programs and listening programs, that's what's really key for, I think, for our agency, and particularly me in this role. I think in the federal government, we got used to doing annual survey, the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey that OPM, Office of Personnel Management, runs every year. So we would do a survey and we'd read it and we'd say, oh, this is the opinion of our people. And then we would do action plans and then we'd roll out certain activities that we would hope would increase engagement. In this era, you can't do once a year and understand what your employees' experiences are, what they need, what's working well, and what needs to improve. We need active, ongoing listening programs. So one of the things we're doing at CISA is having more pulse surveys, having more focus groups and what we call sensing sessions, expecting our leaders to have office hours where anybody can come and just talk about what's going well, what do they need, how are things going? Because we feel like it is an ongoing need to hear from our people. And I think in this role and over the years of serving, I've also realized there's never a one-size-fits-all. You know, we think certain people need certain things at certain times in their career. There's no one-size-fits-all. Neither can we also customize everything to every individual. So there's got to be a sweet spot in building really great talent programs, but also, like I said, thinking about, can we do this in modules? Can we make it a menu? Can we do it just in time as people need it so they can practice the new skill or knowledge in their role? So I think we have such great opportunity, again, with the technology that enables us to really focus on how we connect people with their work and their team to get things done in very new ways.
This is always an interesting question. Is there a figure either from your personal life, your past, somewhere in history generally, that inspired you, your leadership style, how you view leadership?
There are many figures who have been very inspirational to me, but there is one that sticks out, and that's my mother, Paula Brownlee, who has been a very inspiring leader to me all my life. And I think because, first and foremost, she had a strong family and a strong career. And that's something I always wanted. And I saw her first as my mother, but then I also saw her as a leader in her career and in academia, which was her chosen field. But I always knew her family came first. And as I saw how she balanced different family needs with also a growing and more prominent career positions in leadership, that she had to balance that. And I think I learned from her that you can have both. You have to focus on different things through your career and through your life, but that you don't have to trade one for the other. I've been married, happily married, for 32 years, and I'm a mother of twins who are almost 24 years old. So, and I've had a great career in public service. So I think that having her as a role model has really helped me find my own courage, find my own confidence, and find my own voice in how I can prioritize the things that are most important to me so that I can actually balance both family and career.
And you're doing it well. Thank you. Having known you now for 7 or 8 years and worked alongside you, your passion is infectious.
Thank you.
Your intelligence and the thoughtfulness with which you approach all of these issues, it's an honor for you to be here, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
I'm Shane Canfield, CEO at WEPA, and until next time, have a great day.
Find the full podcast and future episodes of Lessons in Leadership on the Federal News Network app and anywhere you enjoy your podcasts.